we don't have the right to subordinate other people to our ends or treat them as objects for our uses. And that is a fundamental kind of equality that I think is at the root of libertarianism.
Hi, my name is Zach Weissmuller for Reason TV. We're here at Libertopia 2012 in San Diego. I'm here with Roderick Long, professor of philosophy at Auburn University and president of the Molinari Institute. Roderick, thank you very much for joining us.
It's good to be here.
Your topic here at Libertopia is race, gender, and anarchy. Why should those interested in reducing the size and scope of government be interested in discussing ideas like race and gender?
So on the one hand, you have libertarians for whom the defining principle of whether something counts as a rights violation is whether it counts as a physical invasion of your person or your justly acquired property or the threat thereof, something like that. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you have people on the left who are concerned with systems of oppression based on race or gender or class or various other things that don't seem to count as rights violations by libertarian standards. And so as a result, these two groups tend to be somewhat hostile to each other. But I think that both sides are mistaken. You can perfectly happily embrace a robust understanding of the non-aggression principle and not soften it or weaken it or anything like that, and still at the same time think that the left are definitely onto something when they talk about these forms of oppression that are not directly forms of rights violations.
Let's say, there's an employer who clearly discriminates against some sort of group, whether it's women or a certain race or people with disabilities. Right now we have laws to combat that. That would be the use of force. What's a non-aggressive way to fight back against that sort of discrimination?
In many ways, although the state has laws against discrimination, the state indirectly does things that tend to make either to incentivize discrimination or at least make it easier. So many traditional libertarians will argue that there can't really be that much genuine discrimination in the market because the market would tend to penalize people who hire on the basis of something other than, at least who systematically hire on the basis of something other than competence.
If women operate at the same productivity and you could pay them less money, more people would hire them because it's better for the bottom line. That's the argument that they make, and you're saying it's incorrect.
Okay, well, here's what I think was wrong with that, is that, well, first of all, we're not in a free market. And when you have these larger and more hierarchical firms, which are, I think, in many ways less efficient, but are able to survive because they're able to socialize their costs through government privilege, one of the things that happens is that the people making these decisions in these firms have a hard time determining what the productive contribution of a particular employee is. You've got a whole bunch of people working together, and then you've got some employer high up who's sort of distant from what's going on the floor anyway, and they have to make their decisions, and there isn't that much price feedback. So the decisions are going to be based on their judgments, and their judgments might very well be influenced, not necessarily by hostility to women, though there certainly is such a thing, but if they come in with sort of a presupposition that women are less productive than men, well, that won't get corrected, and even if it's wrong, and so they're more likely to make decisions on that basis, and so you'll see that kind of thing go on. So that's just an example of.
So you're saying it's the regulatory state that has created these giant firms that may engage in bad practices, and that is so.
That's one of the sources.
Okay.
Now I'm not saying that there can't be, that there can't be sort of systematic bad things happening in a free market too.
So what do we do about those?
Various kinds of private associations, consciousness-raising groups, unions, which is a scary word for a lot of libertarians, but we're not talking about unions with government privileges. We're talking about associations of workers, joined together and demanding certain conditions as part of their bargaining and so forth. There are, non-coercive ways of achieving these things, and if libertarianism is right, then those are going to be more effective than, one-size-fits-all, top-down, bureaucratically imposed coercive solutions.
When we're talking about, race, gender, sexuality, any of these kind of categories, a discussion arises also about political correctness. And you've written about political correctness. It's a term that tends to scare a lot of libertarians, but you say that maybe not all political correctness is a threat to free speech, and maybe there's a need for it.
Political correctness refers to a whole bunch of different stuff. And as is often the case with terms that refer to a whole bunch of different stuff, some of it's good and some of it's bad. So when people talk about political correctness, they often worry about certain kinds of very, intolerant thought control and so forth. And, that exists and that is practiced under the form of political correctness, and I think it's harmful. But many of the things that get dismissed as mere political correctness, I think are, sensible attempts at civility and at recognition of genuine, harms and inequities that people have faced. Libertarians often say, well, why should we pay any attention to, feminists, for example? Because, most feminists are not libertarian. They're anti-libertarian. They want all kinds of government stuff. So why should we care about them? Of course, then the feminists can say, why should we care about libertarians? Most of them are anti-feminist. Which I think is an equally fair point. But there was a time in the 19th century when you didn't get this divide as much. 19th century libertarians, particularly many of the 19th century American individualist anarchists, saw the state and racial oppression and gender and class and all these things as sort of interlocking systems of oppression. They were much more nuanced about these things, many of them anyway, were. But I think that around the end of the 19th, beginning of the 20th century, sort of libertarians and left went their separate ways, and libertarians sort of specialized in understanding how markets work and how government intervention works. Mm-hmm. And leftists spent more time specializing in understanding how sort of non-governmental forms of oppression work and on how sort of non-market forms of voluntary association work. And each one came with some very valuable insights in the stuff that they were working on, but tended to lose track of the other stuff. And I think that if you bring the two sides together, and bring the main insights of the two sides together, you can really have a much more powerful social theory.
Another idea that's typically associated with the left is equality. You talk about something called equality of authority.
If we're all equal in authority, that means I don't have the right to impose anything on you without your consent. You don't have the right to impose anything on me without my consent. We don't have the right to subordinate other people to our ends or treat them as objects for our uses. And that is a fundamental kind of equality that I think is at the root of libertarianism, that libertarianism is a profoundly egalitarian doctrine in that sense.
We'll leave it at that. Thanks very much for talking with us, Roderick Long, for Reason TV. I'm Zach Weissmuller.